This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 18th of April 2025. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 17th of April 2025. Before we get started, we owe you an apology, I'm afraid. Last Friday, we experienced some unexpected technical problems in the studio when we were making copies of that morning's recording. This meant that some of our listeners received memory sticks on which were included recordings from a previous week. So please accept our apologies, and hopefully it won't happen again this week. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: Council Chief blasts plans for 20,000 home scheme. Bus driver rescues missing boy, aged 3, and tributes paid to outgoing dean. So we start with the first headline story.
Right. Council Chief blasts plans for 20,000 home scheme. Councillors from Winchester and Basingstoke have said that they will work together to oppose plans for a 20,000 home new town. Councillor Martin Todd, City Council leader, made the pledge at a packed public meeting attended by 100 people. He described the proposal for the Micheldever new town as like a bomb in the middle of the area. The issue is coming to a head with a developer, the O'Flynn Group, and submitting plans to the government's new town task force in February. Councillor Todd was speaking at the annual general meeting of the Deva Society at the Warren Centre, Micheldever Station, on Tuesday, April the 15th. He spoke as part of a panel discussion alongside Councillor Jacqueline Porter, Cabinet Member for Place and Local Plan at the City Council, and Councillor Andy Conlesco, Cabinet Member for the Strategic Planning and Infrastructure for Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council. Tessa Robinson, chair of the Deva Society, said that she would want to see a collaboration of councils to oppose this new town. Councillor Todd said, "I can't even work out how you would do 20,000 homes. It's an absolutely enormous number, and the idea that you have urban planning, where you have the A303 going through the middle of it, the whole thing seems completely insane. I can't even work out where it would go. We've seen plans before for 6,000 houses or 8,000 houses, and I think, where are the other 12,000 going to go? Are we going to have a skyscraper appear or something?" One of the things that is most broken about this entire process is, in theory, we have a decision coming in July. It's now April, and we have seen nothing. We will be asked to respond to something that, at very short notice, and 20,000 is so far beyond anything that we have seen before, that the full impact is something that is going to have before us to respond to. John, I'm sorry, these glasses are not working. I'm so sorry.
Bus driver rescues missing boy, aged 3. A bus driver has been celebrated after she rescued a missing 3-year-old boy found wandering dangerously close to a busy Winchester road. Edita Kozlowska was driving the number 2 service when she spotted the toddler along in the tunnel between Rainleigh Road and Airlie Road. The boy was seen jumping from the pavement onto the road and back again. Concerned for his safety, Edita stopped the bus. Despite multiple vehicles passing without stopping, Edita, who has worked at Stagecoach for 5 months, acted swiftly. A young woman on board got off the bus and brought the child safely on board. Edita said, "I just kept thinking, what if he ran into the road or towards the rail tracks? Nobody else stopped. I was just happy I could help. If someone needs help, whether they're 3 years old or 80, you help." After getting the child on board, Edita called the police and then contacted the Winchester depot to report the situation and keep passengers informed. She also arranged for her passengers to board the next bus behind hers. Police arrived shortly after, confirming that the boy had been reported missing earlier that morning on March the 30th. Mark Jackson from Stagecoach South praised her response. "Edita showed incredible presence of mind and care," he said, "not just for the child, but for our passengers. Her actions exemplify the very best of what it means to be part of the Stagecoach South team. We're proud to have her representing us."
Tributes paid to outgoing Dean. Winchester Cathedral has held the final service of the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle as Dean of Winchester. It took place on Palm Sunday, April the 13th, and reflected on her ministry and her last official day prior to retirement. As previously reported, Dean Catherine has stepped down from her position earlier than had been announced last year. This came following the publication of a review into bullying at the cathedral, which found that she had led the chapter into a period of crisis. The first lesson was read by Bruce Parker, chairman of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. The second lesson was read by Canon Roland Ream, interim dean. Dean Catherine delivered the homily, speaking about the journey of life and faith and the importance of focusing on what truly matters. She shared how Holy Week had shaped her own faith as a student at Leeds University and how its impact has endured throughout her life and ministry. She concluded her sermon with one of her favourite prayers: "For all that has been, thanks. For all that shall be, yes." The service also featured a beautiful offering of music from the girls' choir. The lay clerks who could not be present made their contribution by video at the presentation. At the close, the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen, gave a special blessing to Dean Catherine and her husband Robin. Speaking on behalf of all who worship and work at the cathedral, Bishop Philip gave thanks for her leadership and ministry. Paying tribute, Canon Roland said, "She's maintained a prayerful regard for the welfare of others and the community she serves. And to me and many others, we see in this a vivid example of self-sacrificial Christian love. The ministry that Catherine has laid down symbolically today will soon be taken up by someone else, and they will be grateful for her legacy. They will build on the gifts and graces we've so much respected and admired in Catherine: a humble integrity, a sense of fun, a belief that the deepest truths also embrace the widest circle, and a sense that our ministries, whatever their occasional pomp and circumstance, occupy a very small slice of the amazing history of this place."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Baisley, Doreen Elizabeth Baisley, a Colebrook, on the 4th of April, aged 97. Benest, Rosemary Benest, at home on the 2nd of April, aged 88. Burke, Raymond Brian Burke, known as Ray, on the 20th of March. Chester, Rex Chester, on the 6th of March, aged 89. Diamond, David Ernest Diamond, at Winchester Hospice on the 8th of April, aged 75. Edwards, Gwendolyn Emily Olive Edwards, known as Gwen, on the 24th of March, aged 100. Henshaw, Clinton Henshaw, at home on the 3rd of April, aged 88. Portal, Jane Mary Portal, at home on the 1st of April, aged 100. Walton, Mary Ruth Walton, known as Ruth, on the 1st of April at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84. Christian comment is from the Reverend Philip Crinks and is entitled, How Deep Is Your Love? As a vicar, I was always struck by the difference between the congregation sizes on Good Friday and Easter Day. I understand why many people find Good Friday challenging, indeed barely manageable. The story strikes them as depressing, centred on suffering and death. But the story of the cross is not actually at its core a story of suffering. It's a story, a song of love unknown. The big question Good Friday poses to us is how much we believe God loves us. And the answer it gives is that God loves us with a love which is incomprehensible in the vastness of its depth. Isaiah understood centuries before Christ why church on Good Friday might be hard. We often read the last of the suffering servant songs at the service. Almost people will be able to say in the servant, Isaiah says, is someone whose appearance is marred, someone who is suffering, in pain, who is being crushed, who is powerless. But what is being revealed to the eyes of faith in the suffering and death of the cross is in fact the power and glory of God. Jesus, in a way which starkly challenges our own shallow loves, frequently wills the sacrifice that he makes. He chooses to make his divine power not in escaping crushing pain and death, but in embracing it. Having come among us to show his love for us, he does not pull back. As the end draws near, Jesus does not say, oh well, I love the creation quite a lot, but not that much. No, he loves us to the end. This is the key to understanding our own existence. What power put us here? God's grace. It is in him that we're able to live and move and have our being. So the act of creation itself is best seen as an act of self-giving love. This love first creates us, then calls us back when we fall, as all humans do at times, into the slavery of sin. Finally, it pays the price to redeem us, making fullness of life possible forever. In that resurrection life, we experience with joy how the chains which bind our fallen nature are broken. We also grasp how that can only happen through the most extreme sacrifice the universe could ever see, the death of the Son of God. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. Thus says the Lord, he who created you, who formed you. Do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine. How far God will go for us is the story of Good Friday. The power of resurrection life in Christ is the story of Easter Day. Both are worth celebrating, and your brothers and sisters in Christ will be happy to celebrate with you on either or both occasions. And that was by the Reverend Philip Cranks. Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. I'll just wait for the emergency vehicle to go past. Right, we've got 8 letters this week, some of them are quite long, but anyway, we'll start off with the first one.
And this first one is from Simon Lever, entitled A Farewell Tribute to the Dean. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle was Dean of Winchester from 2017. The combined evensong and tributes to her on Sunday were a true celebration of her dedication to the community and to love of God. Dean Catherine's departing message filled all with admiration and warmth. She was a true figure of kindness and positivity. So many agreed that her smile brightened the day. The gathering, where we personally wished her a happy retirement, was certainly very special and heartfelt. She will be missed, but we have to thank her for the generosity of service and wish her a happy retirement. That's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Road Rubbish, is from Ashley Trafford. We have lived in Hampshire since the early 70s, having the opportunity to purchase a rural property in the early 90s. For some inexplicable reason, a large number of our population cannot travel through this beautiful part of the world without emptying the contents of their vehicles throughout our local highways and byways. We have two major routes running close, the A303 and A33. The slowing down at these junctions gives these individuals their need to dispose of anything they have recently consumed and have lying around. As a local voluntary litter picker, I know exactly what that is and where it was probably purchased. Many items come out of the highway service stations and food outlets. I've been litter picking for many years, but for some reason, after COVID, respect and standards suddenly diminished. We're out again, and so who gives a damn? Very strange. We've become a sad, blinkered, selfish nation with no respect for anyone or anything. Businesses and governments and their councils will, I believe, regret the consequence of years of cost-cutting and the overall lack of investment, especially in state schooling, allowing and giving such low expectations to our could-be talented children. All children are born gifted. It's what happens beyond that that matters. With this head-in-the-sand attitude, I'm saddened by this downfall in standards and expectations. I mentioned earlier the early 70s. I returned from an excellent but strict education system abroad to a new, trendy, supposedly forward-thinking education system, which was the total opposite. They thought if a child doesn't want to be educated, that is their prerogative. That individual was me. I remonstrated my unexpected return from overseas and went from a talented boy to a moron with a swish of a passport. That is how bad it was. The authorities eventually allowed me to sit with non-English-speaking children, to play records, and to keep me out of classrooms. I couldn't believe the low level of education that was being given. I was a pain. My trendy parents allowed it to happen. I didn't carry a satchel, just a record player. That's where I think it all started, especially with the incoming government's belief that business is the answer to the nation's needs. So we spent the family silver, and this is where we are, a damaged nation. I'll continue to pick up the rubbish and hope that the litterers get into their tiny brains. I know, I'll put it in a bin. That is generally provided. It is probably wishful thinking. And that letter was from Ashley Trafford from New Road in Mitchell Devastation.
Speed limits, and this is a letter from Michael Fielding. BBC South Today has covered the A34 twice recently, a section between Winchester and Oxford that has been a feature of my life since the late 1971. The comments which follow are all post-opening of the Newbury bypass in November 1998, sorry, and are now easy access to the M4. To me, the road seems to be part of a highway from Morocco to Glasgow. It's a dual carriageway, major trunk road, masquerading as a motorway. The slip road tend not to be that brilliant, and traffic wanting to join the road tend to barge on rather than give way to existing traffic. It's very common for there to be more traffic in the outside lane than the inside lane. In part, I would suggest, for that barging much traffic wants to speed at 70 miles an hour. In my experience, the 50 miles from Winchester to Oxford is about an hour at the maximum speed of 60 miles an hour. Perhaps 5 minutes might be gained at 70 miles an hour. Why not limit the speed on the A34 to 60 miles an hour? It would probably reduce the number of accidents on that road. And that letter is from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Nick Adams-King, leader of the Hampshire County Council, writes about different things. I wish to clarify some misconceptions in Andrew Beadle's recent letter about devolution and local government reorganisation in Hampshire, Chronicle, April the 3rd. It's important to distinguish between devolution and local government reorganisation, which are two different things. Devolution involves transferring powers and funding from Westminster to Hampshire and the Solent, so we in local government can make decisions closer to the communities we serve. In contrast, local government reorganisation refers to restructuring the number and structure of councils, creating a more efficient, smaller number of unitary authorities. In the Hampshire and Solent region, this would bring together all the services currently provided by the area's 15 councils. Mr. Beadle's assertion that Hampshire County Council will devolve its services and become a strategic authority with an elected mayor is incorrect. Hampshire County Council is responsible for 85% of local government services and budgets within Hampshire, and the new unitary councils emerging from reorganisation will continue to deliver these vital functions like social care, education, roads and public health, just as the county council does now. The new devolved strategic authority, led by an elected mayor, will focus on broader regional issues like economic growth, strategic planning, and infrastructure. Government is clear that both devolution and local government reorganisation will happen and has already consulted Hampshire residents on its devolution plans for our area. However, there's still work to do before a final local government structure is sent to government this autumn, and Hampshire residents will have an opportunity to provide their input and help shape that submission. But before that happens, local authorities need to look at every option. There is no wrong answer, but we must ensure that the new councils we create are sustainable and resilient. New, larger councils have the potential to save money and make local government simpler, stronger, and more secure for the people they serve. However, they can only do so if we ensure they're able to not only carry the burden of the ever-growing cost of social care, but also be resilient enough to withstand financial shocks. That letter is from Nick Adams King, leader Hampshire County Council, HCC councillor for Rumsey Rural, TVBC councillor for Blackwater.
This letter is from our regular correspondent and former mayor, Eileen Berry, and it's entitled Family Pub. Sometimes it's obvious we don't think people who go above and beyond in their efforts to give us some of the most enjoyable evenings. I'm sorry, it doesn't say don't think, it says don't thank people. As I've been going particularly to the March Hare at Harestock, to their fun evenings, which are bingo, karaoke, quizzes and live groups. Not only that, with some of the nicest pizzas and one of their speciality meals is their hamburgers that are on offer. This is a family pub with the emphasis on families of all ages who enjoy a good old-fashioned entertaining evening. Now I have to say, I've not seen any drunkenness from any quarter. I've seen responsible drinking and people coming and going in taxis, locals walking, or even small bus services. So it is a myth that our old tradition, which has been with us for hundreds of years, of our inns and our pubs being a bad influence. It's actually quite the reverse in this very, very uncertain world that we are living in at the moment. The young manager of the March Hare and his team are absolutely dedicated and work so hard, but enjoy what they're doing, which is so important. Why is this so important to me to sing their praises? Because so much has been taken away from the ordinary people who just want to enjoy the company of others. It is so needed. And that letter was from Eileen Berry, Prizedean Road, Harestock in Winchester.
And this letter from Geoffrey Brooking is entitled Kept Promises. What another great year for the Labour government and the change that they promised Britain. First, we saw $200 million invested in recruiting 3,000 neighbourhood police and PCSOs in the next year, which will put 1,800 bobbies back on the beat. Secondly, $338 million was promised to roll out the 319 new zero emission buses across the whole of England. Third, we had the announcement that a new world class university theme park is coming to Bedford, thus boosting our economy by an estimated $50 billion and creating 28,000 jobs. Fourth, Labour backed the British car industry in the face of global economic headwinds. This was on top of the $2.3 billion to boost the car manufacturing recently. Fifth, it was confirmed that 1,503 GPs have been recruited since October the 1st. Sixth, we saw Labour publicly backing South Yorkshire Mayor's plan to reopen Doncaster Sheffield Airport. Seventh, we had the announcement that more than 100,000 extra patients have been treated on time. 80,000 more people have had cancer diagnosed or ruled out within 28 days, and the NHS waiting list have fallen for 6 months in a row. And eighth, not only did our Labour government boost the second meeting of the Steel Council with a commitment to British steelmaking, including energy cost relief for businesses, expected to be worth over $300 million in 1925. But we also saw the government to give the business secretary and the power and control necessary to do everything possible to protect the steel industry and steel jobs. promises made by Labour, and yet again... succeeded. And that letter is from Geoffrey Brooking of Sexley Court, Havant. Probably a Labour voter.
No. Crippling costs, writes Ted Hart. After reading last week's Chronicle, who'd want to start a business in Winchester? Already struggling with Rachel Reeves' attempt to cripple the economy, businesses may have looked to Winchester City Council for some help. So, what did they get from the Liberal Democrat absolute zeros? An increase in rents and the already unpopular and unfair parking charges. And when you think it couldn't get worse, they allow them to dig a hole and disappear. Gas people to close Chesil Street, thus cutting off park and ride sites into the town centre. And, I'm led to believe, stopping all buses to Highcliffe for a month. Breathtaking. And on the subject of road closures, I notice there are to be night closures on Sussex Street, Upper High Street and Rumsey Road by Pitt Village soon. It reminded me of the Eagles' classic Hotel California song. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. Come on, zeros, stop looking like absolute beginners and show some grasp of what is a serious situation for business in the city. That rather strong letter is from Ted Hart, Maytrue Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Just as a slight editorial correction, it's the Hampshire County Council that's responsible for highways and closures thereof. And the gas companies have a statutory duty to make repairs rather than allow places to blow up. So I think it's a bit far-fetched to blame the City Council for all of that. This next letter is from regular correspondent Judith Martin, and it's entitled Beyond Repair. I've spent my career trying to persuade people, councils, individuals, not to demolish buildings, but to restore them instead. So it's rare for me to support demolition, but in this case I do. The pool, according to WCC's own commissioned surveys, is damaged beyond repair. The other facilities were replaced, at huge cost, by the building at Bar End. Is there really a need for both? Before the City Council embark on its open process, it should be made extremely clear that the 1902 indenture, the legal document conveying the land to the mayor, aldermen and citizens of the city, states very clearly that the purpose is to provide a public park and recreation ground. The document actually uses capital letters. Any buildings that might be permitted must be solely connected with that purpose. There was, for example, a bandstand and a boating hut. In fact, Hampshire Archives have another document, a letter dated the 13th of February 1910 from William Barrow Simmons to Sir Robert Morant, Permanent Secretary to the Government's Record Board of Education. Barrow Simmons writes, "The corporation has to provide a school some 15 months since they interviewed me to know whether I object to their appropriating a portion of the recreation ground for this purpose. I objected. It appears they applied to your office and that a gentleman was sent down to view it. He agreed with me and objected. The recreation ground was some years since sold to the corporation for the use of the citizens and not for building purposes." A further document dated July the 2nd, 1925, shows a plan and agreement between Barrow Simmons and the mayor, etc. Again, this time for an open bathing place in North Wall's recreation ground. It seems in retrospect that the existing building should never have been built. The longer it remains, the more it costs the public purse. We've been repeatedly assured that funds are earmarked for demolition. The plan was for WCC to pay for demolition before the university took over. There is no reason why the university's decision should prevent that demolition. And that letter was from Judith Martin, Romsey Road in Winchester.
Next, we have a Chronicle comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster. Apologies for that. Letter from Westminster from our MP, and then first person.
And the editorial comment is entitled, "Village is the wrong place for a new town. A packed public meeting in Mitchell Devastation on Tuesday evening heard the latest about the battle to stop development of a new town. The developer, the O'Flynn Group, want to build on unspoilt countryside around the station. Various iterations of the scheme have been on the table since the late 1960s and 1970s, making this battle probably the longest running news story in Chronicle history. Campaigners have seen off previous pressure from Eagle Star and Zurich, but that was a different time, before the Labour government announced that it was very serious about kick-starting the level of new housing not seen since the 1960s. Winchester City Council housing not seen since the 1960s. Winchester City Council last year said it must plan. New homes a year and of 676, an increase of 423 or 62%. These numbers mean that schemes such as Mitteldever New Town, which would likely have a total value of £1 billion, becomes much more likely. Councillors at the meeting said that they would said what they could, but to a large extent the decision has been taken out of their hands by the government. At stake is rolling chalk downland and the first real piece of open countryside in the 50 miles out of London, untouched by ribbon development and the infilling that characterises much of the Hampshire and the home counties. Setting aside whether Labour's housing figures are realistic, after all that exactly was going on, to build these homes, if they get planning permission, this is still the wrong place for these houses. It was the wrong place in 1969, and it's the wrong place in 2025 or 2026.
Letter from Westminster now, and this is from the Winchester MP, Danny Chambers. Trump has launched a nonsensical and hugely damaging trade war across the entire world. The sheer scale of his attack means it will affect businesses here in Winchester and across Hampshire, even small businesses that don't import or export to the USA. We need to rally in support of local businesses at risk from the economic shock caused by Trump's delusional attack, including local farmers, high street shops and services. Along with many of my Liberal Democrat colleagues, that's exactly what I'm calling for. I say to everyone out there to buy local and back British whenever you can to help us weather this Trump storm. Trump is using tariffs to pressure our government to allow imports of products that are produced to lower standards, such as hormone-treated beef or chlorine-washed chicken. So far, they're listening and have not yet capitulated. But we have the likes of Nigel Farage and the Reform Party, who seem very willing to obey the wishes of Trump and have refused to speak out against these tariffs. I hope our government doesn't listen to them and stands up for Britain on the world stage. Whilst it was good to see that the government is looking for ways to support the economy, with some investments brought forward, they are still insisting on pushing ahead with their tax rises that will hit small businesses, hospices and social care providers. Now that we have the extra economic pressure from Trump to deal with, it really is indefensible to proceed with them. I've been calling on them to reverse the introduction of these measures, and I fear the impact it will have on local businesses if they don't listen. Despite the economic situation, there is some good news for us locally. I recently attended the opening of a new electric vehicle charging super hub near Winchester. It will provide new jobs whilst making it easier for local people to make the choice to shift to cleaner electric vehicles. If we combine this with improvements to our bus services to and from the towns and villages around Winchester, we can help reduce congestion, clean up our air, and reduce travel costs for everyone. In March, we enjoyed some great English Tourism Week events in Winchester. It was wonderful to attend the celebrations of the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen. I was delighted to join Visit Winchester to see how they were bringing people to the city to learn about the history and celebrate her legacy. Finally, I've just returned from a journey across Europe during the parliamentary recess. I joined the International Christian Medical and Dental Association, Mighty Convoy, and the Christian Medical Association of Ukraine to drive a donated ambulance filled with vital medical supplies from London to Lviv. The supplies we delivered will help them to treat both injured soldiers and civilians who have been targeted by Putin's airstrikes across their cities. They've been fighting to stop Putin extending his ambitions further into Europe. So I believe we owe it to them to help in any small way we can. That's from Danny Chambers, MP.
This week's first person is entitled The Glorious Mullet is Back, and it's by Joanna Lewis. Happy Easter, everyone. I bring great news. The mullet haircut is back. It's now sweeping through the younger generation from teenagers to preschool. I absolutely love a mullet. At last, I can come out as a huge fan of this iconic and often ironic haircut. Evidence suggests it first came to Britain with the Romans, who favoured it for keeping their necks warm. It pops up in the Byzantine period and again during early colonial encounters with indigenous societies in North America and the South Pacific. In the 1970s, Tom Jones and David Bowie sported the cut, illustrating its diverse appeal. And one of my guinea pigs was born with one. Essentially, the mullet is three haircuts in one. This was how celebrity hairstylist Lee Stafford described it to me in the early noughties. Shorter on top with layers or a micro fringe, a distinctive middle and sides, and finally the pièce de résistance, a bit of tail down the back. Yet despite that complexity, it's surprisingly easy to do it yourself. This is a clue to its renaissance. During lockdown, there was a natural drift to mullet-like creations because many of us took to cutting our own hair, sometimes after a few drinks. The result was often very uneven. Whilst we could cut the fringe and sides, reaching the back was challenging. Some of us emerged looking like a baby orangutan had attached itself to our heads. Fast forward to 2025. Social media is awash with videos of ordinary people showing us how to cut hairstyles, including the mullet. Plus, the world has been gifted Gerald from Clarkson's Farm. This national treasure has not only inspired us with his good sense, including the view that everyone around him is nuts, but he also sported the classic mullet. Tractor Chic was born and Anna Wintour went on the run. There's a mullet for everyone, dear reader. There's the more macho Australian rules football meets rugby league half-back mullet. It can be ironic, but it's no longer a parody of the working class Paul Calf character perfected by Steve Coogan. This is confident, playful, and masculine. Add length to the back, shaved sides, and a tattooed thigh, then the vibe is more primordial. Think Mel Gibson, Braveheart meets Angela Rayner meets the Hacker. Alternatively, go a bit longer, with choppy layers at the top and soft sides. Then it's a nod to the new romantics of the 80s. The Bonnie Tyler Tokel Eclipse perma-goth mullet easily fades into a more androgynous look. Just add a blouse, eyeliner and lip gloss, and suddenly everyone is a backing singer in Duran Duran crying hungry like the wolf. Interestingly, such newfound popularity may present small acts of resistance. DIY haircuts save young people money and spare them a potential visit to those brightly lit Turkish barbers. Some are being exposed, along with American sweet shops and vaping sellers, as money laundering hubs for criminal gangs. In fact, the modern roots of the mullet date to the punk movement and countercultural protest. It was spiky on top, aggressive and defied gravity, a generational reaction against the long-haired hippie look lingering on in the 1970s. Resistance was certainly in the air when I braved it and visited Lee Stafford's Soho salon back in 2001 with a magazine cut out of a model whose hair he'd styled. I'd just resigned my post, protesting against a culture of sexism and misogyny. My mullet was subtle but edgy. It helped me hold my nerve, although I never went back. Far too expensive. But now and again, I ask my bemused local hairdresser for what I call mullet light, a middle-aged version. If you're still unconvinced and find the marvellous mullet an affront to style, likely we're from the same demographic. So go get one. The more of us who do, the quicker it'll go out of fashion.
Some what's on items. On Thursday the 24th of April at St Cross is the first of their Perfect Pitch concerts, which run through the summer at 12:30 p.m. And at the concert on the Thursday the 24th, it was a piano recital by Katya Grabova. The City of Winchester Trust has announced a programme of talks which start at 5:45 at a variety of venues. You need to go onto their website, of which I don't, I'm afraid, have the details, to get more details and to make bookings. On Tuesday the 29th of April, Judith Martin will talk about Hubert de Cronin Hastings, who was owner and editor of the Architectural Review. On Tuesday the 6th of May, Tony Sexton will talk about the Minster streets of Winchester. And on Tuesday the 13th of May, Richard Lewis, a strategic transport and town planner, will talk about unblocking Winchester. From Friday the 25th to Sunday the 27th of April, it will be the Winchester Books Festival at the Arc. On Wednesday the 30th of April at the Theatre Royal, a production of That Knave Raleigh, about the life of Sir Walter Raleigh. From Friday the 2nd to Monday the 5th of May, the Winchester Chamber Music Festival. On Tuesday the 8th of May, a very important event, the Winchester Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting, to which all listeners, friends and volunteers are invited. It will be held, as I say, on Thursday the 8th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Memorial Hall in Littleton, our usual venue. There will be a talk about the Houses of Parliament by Frieda Bates, who is one of our volunteers and who is also an official London Blue Badge guide. And this will be followed by afternoon tea. So if you could let us know if you intend to come, everybody is welcome. And if you could either contact John Richards either by email, I'll give the email address, which is jprich@tiscali.co.uk. I'll read that out. jprich@tiscali.co.uk. www.tessarobinson.co.uk, but it might be simpler just to phone him on 023 8073 2888. That's 023 8073 2888. And just a final item of what's on Tuesday the 3rd of June at the Theatre Royal, the historian Professor David Olusaga will be talking about history's missing chapters, the stories of those overlooked by history. Sunrise at the moment is around 6 o'clock in the morning and sunset is around 8 p.m. at night. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And again, our apologies for the problems we had last week. We now continue with further items of news. City celebrates Palm Sunday. Members of the public joined the congregation during a Palm Sunday procession through Winchester. Palm Sunday, on April the 13th, was marked as an annual special event. Commencing at the Great Hall at 10 a.m, cathedral dignitaries and choristers were joined by Dermot the Donkey in a procession through the High Street and into the cathedral close. Opening the gathering, the Reverend Canon Dr. Rowley Ream, Interim Dean of Winchester, read, "Dear friends in Christ, during Lent we have been praying by preparing by works of love and self-sacrifice for the celebration of our Lord's death and resurrection. Today we come together to begin this celebration in joyful union with the Church throughout the world. Up to 100 people gathering were invited to hold up their palm crosses which had been handed out to the congregation." Canon Ream continued, "God our Saviour, whose Son Jesus Christ entered Jerusalem as Messiah, to then suffer and die, let these palms be for us signs of his victory. Grant that we who bear them in his name may ever hail him as our King and follow him in the way that leads to eternal life." Hymns were sung as the members of the congregation, as the procession continued through the streets, and members of the public gathered to watch as the procession made its way to the cathedral.
Winchester ranked among best places. Winchester was ranked highly among the best places to live by a national survey, but was only rated as the third best in Hampshire after facing stiff competition from the likes of Botley and Netley. Put together by Garrington Property Finders, the report analysed 1,447 towns, boroughs and cities with a population of more than 5,000 across the UK, taking into account factors such as numbers of listed and period homes, air quality, crime figures, and the percentage of homes with their closest primary school ranked outstanding by Ofsted. The Cathedral City came in at 172nd. Did I say that right? 172nd overall and 41st in the southeast. Whilst it ranked highly in the schools, employment and connectivity category, Winchester performed pitifully in house prices, quality and value, perhaps unsurprisingly. It was also given middling scores in well-being, natural environment and heritage/culture. Considering Winchester is the former capital, locals might be forgiven for having some qualms with its performance in this last category, particularly as it was beaten by Bagshot.
That's ridiculous.
However,
ludicrous. Just nonsense.
However, the report clarified, quote, "Our report is not a league table of the best and worst places to live. On the contrary, the research only ranks the best places to live, so being included, whether at number one or number 1,447, is to be applauded. Residents in the High Street reacted to the survey. Winchester residents Sally Owens and Mandy Livermore, both 61, said, "It's the best. I love it," said Sally. "I wouldn't rate it third in Hampshire, I would say higher." Mandy added, "I love the authentic and ancient feel to Winchester and the lovely cathedral, but it's lost a lot of the shops, such as ladies' clothes shops, and changed them to coffee shops and estate agents." John Edwards, 81, who lives on the outskirts of Winchester, often visits the centre. He said, "It's a lovely area. As a shopping centre, it has lost its draws. It's now got a lot of eating places. There is an overcapacity for eating establishments. There are now a lot of chains, less local boutiques, and fewer women's clothes shops. There are no affordable houses." Richard Ferneyhough, or Ferneyhough, however he pronounces it, 80, who moved to Winchester in 2024, said, "I have loved Winchester all my life. My feeling is Winchester has lost its charm and vitality. I wouldn't rate it close to the top. I would say eighth. I moved here as I wanted a quieter life."
Line's new locomotive flagship to be unveiled. The Watercress Line will host a gala of firsts at this year's Spring Steam Gala. The popular event, which will take place from April the 25th to the 27th, will see new guest locomotives on the tracks and the introduction of the newly restored flagship engine 35005 Canadian Pacific. Visitors will have the opportunity to ride behind a lineup of guests and home fleet locomotives while exploring the four heritage stations along the 10-mile line through the Hampshire countryside. The event will also feature guided tours, restoration projects on display, and various exhibits. The Watercress Line will welcome the London and South Western Railway T3 Class number 563, which will be making its first visit away from its home railway. Built in 1893, this locomotive has a rich history, having clocked up more than 1.5 million miles in service before being withdrawn in 1945. The L and YR A Class 52322, built in 1895, will also make its debut appearance on the line. The final guest locomotive will be L&YR number 752, / LMS 11456, originally built as a tender engine in 1881. Alongside these special guest locomotives, the Watercress Line's home fleet stars will also be in action, including the newly restored flagship locomotive SR Merchant Navy Class 35005 Canadian Pacific, which was launched on March the 19th. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress Line, said, "We are very excited to welcome these remarkable guest locomotives to our line for the very first time. The Spring Steam Gala is always a highlight in our calendar, and this year's event, as part of the Railway 200 celebrations, promises to be extra special. Adult visitors will have the chance to operate the DS58 steam crane while free behind-the-scenes tours around the engineering works at Ropley will offer a glimpse into steam restoration in action. The event will also feature Queen Mary brake van rides on the goods train, miniature railway displays, and a goods shed exhibition at Medstead and Foremark Station. The Spring Steam Gala will run daily from 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets can be booked on the Watercress Line website. The event will be part of the Railway 2000 campaign, celebrating 200 years of railway travel in the UK.
Police chief still facing misconduct investigation. The police watchdog has now confirmed it is investigating former Hampshire Chief Constable Scott Chilton for two alleged undisclosed relationships with junior officers. Mr. Chilton quit after being told he was under investigation by the Independent Office for Police Conduct, that's the IOPC, for he was under investigation for gross misconduct. The Daily Echo, the Chronicle's sister paper, revealed last month he was facing a probe for not disclosing a past relationship with a junior officer. Now the IOPC is investigating Mr. Chilton for failing to disclose a second relationship since becoming chief in February 2023. His shocked departure does not bring the police watchdog investigation to an end. The IOPC will continue to investigate. IOPC Director Derek Campbell said this morning, that was on April the 7th, we notified the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary's Chief Constable Scott Chilton that he is under investigation for potential gross misconduct. This follows indications that he may have potentially breached police standards of professional behaviour relating to honesty and integrity, duties and responsibilities, discreditable conduct, and orders and instructions. Our investigations, which involve allegations that he failed to disclose a conflict of interest relating to a workplace relationship before he was Chief Constable, began following a conduct referral from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner, that's the PCC, on February the 27th. It was widened to include a further allegation involving failing to disclose a conflict of interest relating to a further workplace relationship after becoming Chief Constable, following a second conduct referral from the PCC's office on March the 31st. We understand that the Chief Constable has today retired from the force with immediate effect. This will not impact our investigation, which remains ongoing. The serving of a gross misconduct notice does not mean that disciplinary proceedings will necessarily follow. At the end of our investigation, we will decide whether Mr. Chilton should face disciplinary proceedings. No criminal offences have currently been identified as part of our ongoing investigation.
Shortlisted fish and chip shop thrilled. A fish and chip shop is delighted to have made a shortlist for a prestigious competition. Shoal, on the Broadway in Winchester, is one of six restaurants to have made the Hampshire Chronicle and Rumsey Advertiser's Fish and Chip Shop of the Year 2025 shortlist. Manager Tara said, "We are thrilled to hear that we've been shortlisted for the Hampshire Chronicle Fish and Chip Shop of the Year award. Shoal is an independent restaurant bringing delicious food and a friendly welcome to all who join us, whether you wish to dine in our beautiful restaurant or enjoy a takeaway. Our fabulous fish, pies and gorgeous gelato are perfect for family and friends. Our dedicated team strives to ensure that everyone who comes through our doors has an enjoyable and memorable experience, offering only the highest quality of food and friendly service. I am super proud of all the team at Shoal who, with their passion, make Shoal what it is today. We look forward to welcoming you all on your visit with us." The Fish and Chip Shop is known for making its food fresh to order, including its gelato, which is made on site with locally sourced milk. Shoal will face competition from Court, Seafair 2, Dave's Fish and Chips, Grammo Fish and Chips, and Paul's Place, who have also all made the shortlist. Now diners can vote for their favourite by buying a copy of this newspaper on the week commencing April the 21st.
New lease helps secure nature reserve's future. A nature reserve near Winchester is set to continue its conservation efforts after a new lease was signed. The Church Commissioners for England has agreed a new lease with Butterfly Conservation at Magdalen Hill Down, a nature reserve near Mourne Hill. This agreement will allow the charity to continue its conservation work on the 46-hectare site. Cameron McKillop, asset manager at the Church Commissioners for England, said, "For more than three decades, the Church Commissioners for England has been proud to support Butterfly Conservation's efforts to boost butterfly species in England's newest national park. We are always looking for parts of our land that can be harnessed to promote nature recovery, and this agreement means this local success story will continue. For the last 30 years, Butterfly Conservation has worked to ensure the steep chalk hillside is home to healthy populations of more than 30 species. For decades, the land was intensively farmed, but is now recovering. The non-profit organisation's conservation programmes have been recognised nationally, and Magdalen Hill Down is now home to the largest population of brown Argus butterflies in Hampshire. Through scrub clearance and grazing management, the group has also successfully reversed a decline in the area's Adonis blue butterflies. The species is native to chalk environments like Magdalen Hill Down. The group is supported by a grant-funded higher-level countryside stewardship scheme and Hampshire County Council. The organisation also has a grazing agreement across the site with the Hampshire Wildlife Trust, with livestock such as white-faced woodland sheep and British white cattle playing an important role in its management. The site is also used to educate the local community about the importance of conservation. This has included its use as a trial site for the Youth Rangers programme, which provides 13 to 17-year-olds with practical opportunities to try their hand at reserve management activities. The new lease forms part of the Church Commissioners for England's work using appropriate land within its farmland portfolio to promote nature and biodiversity improvements across England.
Council fells picturesque tree in City Park. A picturesque tree in Winchester Park has been felled by the City Council. The pine hung over the stretch of the Itchen near the disused River Park Leisure Centre by a bridge between the tennis courts and the bowling green. While it has not fallen into the water, the council determined it was in danger of blocking the waterway and so removed the tree as a precaution. A council spokesman said, "Our team regularly inspects and assesses our tree stock, making sure that it's diverse, robust and resilient. In this case, the team identified a pine tree that had fallen forward towards the river and so it was removed by contractors as a priority to prevent it blocking the waterway. This is not the first tree in recent times to have been felled by the City Council. Last year, a rare honey locust gladiatia tree at Richard Moss House on North Walls was cut down after residents living in that building complained it was causing damp in their homes. Others, however, were unhappy with the felling."
Almshouse brother in nationwide bus tour. A brother at the nation's oldest continuously used almshouse will celebrate its forthcoming 900th anniversary by travelling around the country by bus. Excuse me. John, I do beg your pardon. John Seeger Green, 85, of the Hospital of St Cross, Winchester, will set forth on a circumnavigation of the mainland UK using his bus pass to mark the occasion and raise funds for the conservation of the site's 12th century chapel. He said, "I understand that I have the support of His Majesty the King, patron of the Almshouse Association, and have the written support of the Lord Lieutenant, the Bishop of Winchester, and that of the Master and Trustees of the Hospital. John's Brother on a Bus Odyssey starts on May the 1st. He will travel from Mondays to Fridays, using the weekends for domestic chores and reporting on his progress. He is due to return to Winchester, if all goes well, in mid-July. John spoke of his gratitude to those who have already offered him board. Of the more than 30 overnight and weekend stops along the way, he said, I have found to date 21 places and people kind and generous enough to provide me with accommodation. The brother also hopes to publicise the hospital, which he describes as a splendid place for a single man over 65 to live. The almshouse was founded in 1132 and still observes the dole, a tradition which dictates that anyone who asks for it should receive a piece of bread and a glass of beer. Its name dates back to the original meaning of a hospital, a place where weary travellers could rest before pressing on with their journey. Legend has it that the hospital and the order of brothers which inhabits it originated when Henry of Blois, a grandson of William the Conqueror, was stopped by a young peasant girl who begged him to help her people who were starving because of the civil war, the so-called anarchy. Henry was so moved that he established the hospital. The hospital had to support 13 poor men and feed 100 at the gates each day. The 13 became the Black Brothers of St. Cross. Brothers from this order wear a black robe, a black trencher hat, and a silver badge in the shape of the Cross of Jerusalem.
Big Sleep Out set to return to Cathedral. Trinity's annual Big Sleep Out event is returning to Winchester Cathedral on May the 16th. The Big Sleep Out is a Winchester-based fundraiser to raise money and awareness for individuals experiencing homelessness and domestic abuse. It does this through sponsors from family and friends and a minimum donation of £100 from participants. There will be local entertainment, food, crafts and activities before winding down at 10 p.m. Participants can bring homemade cardboard shelters and sleeping bags to sleep in. At last year's Sleep Out, Trinity raised £32,000, according to Winchester Cathedral. Trinity realises this is not an accurate experience of homelessness, as attendees will be able to return home safely the next morning. Its aim is to be an interesting way to raise money and an educational experience for all. Trinity Winchester was founded in 1986 as a drop-in centre at Holt Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street to provide advice and support for socially deprived people. Now settled at Bradbury House, Derngate Terrace, Winchester, Trinity introduced new services like the Women's Service that provides support for women who have experienced domestic abuse. Trinity has been awarded the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service in 2018, a prestigious award that recognises the hard work of volunteer groups and charities in the UK.
Cash boost for new street pastors. The operators of the Brooks Shopping Centre have donated towards training new Winchester street pastors. Yarrow Estates, which has operated the centre since 2023, gave the charity £500 to train new volunteers and get them ready to hit the streets. Mark Hibbert Hingston, a coordinator for Winchester Street Pastors, said the donation offers a lot of encouragement to us. He said, "We have been going since 2011. Our strut line is offering reassurance, safety and support to all people working in or enjoying our city's nighttime economy through caring, listening and helping. That is mostly just by being there in teams of three or more in uniform and being identifiable. We were pleased to be approached by Simon Turpin, Director of Yarrow Estates at the University of Winchester's Fresher Fair.
By-election scheduled. Another by-election is taking place in the Winchester district following the retirement of a city councillor. Winchester City Council is holding a by-election for Coldon Common and Twyford, which will take place on Thursday, May the 1st. This comes after the departure of Councillor Hannah Greenberg, who was elected to the position in 2023. She has been contacted for comment about her departure. The candidates for the by-election have been revealed by the City Council. The candidates are Liam Bailey Morgan, Green, Alison Phyllis Cochrane, Labour, Harry Johnson Hill, Conservative, and Syed Nasser, Liberal Democrat. As previously reported, Hampshire County Council is also holding by-elections in the Winchester Eastgate and Yateley East and Blackwater electoral divisions on Thursday, May the 1st. The polls have been caused by the retirements of veteran councillors Dominic Hiscock and Adrian Collett. This year, there was due to be a full round of county council elections, but they've been cancelled because of the uncertainty over local government reorganisation and devolution. The City Council by-election comes as the Lib Dems have secure control of the authority with 33 councillors compared to 8 Conservatives, 3 Greens and 1 Independent.
Historic institution announces new posts. One of Winchester's oldest institutions has announced 2 new appointments. St John's Winchester, which has been part of the city for more than 900 years, has named Marion Wanstall as Chair of Trustees and Patrick Rudden as a new trustee. The organisation said they will help shape the next chapter. Ms Wanstall has senior leadership experience in both the commercial and charity sectors. She has held leadership roles at Ho Seasons and the National Trust, served as CEO of Brendan Care, and become CEO of Tricuro in 2025. In 2023, she was awarded the Order of Mercy for her voluntary service. She said, "I am honoured to take on the role of Chair of Trustees at St John's Winchester, an organisation with such a deep and long-standing commitment to supporting older people in our community. Winchester sits at the epicentre of a national crisis around ageing, but St John's seeks to meaningfully address that through high-quality housing and strong community. I hope to listen, advocate, challenge and engage with all in our community to build a future for St John's that is truly reflective of the city within which it is privileged to be founded." Mr Rudden is a chartered financial analyst and certified financial coach with more than 30 years' experience. He's held senior roles at Alliance Bernstein and Jetstone Asset Management in the UK and has also worked in the US. He said, "It's a real privilege to join the Board of Trustees at St John's Winchester. This is a charity with deep roots and a powerful sense of purpose, one that offers not only care, but dignity, continuity and connection for older people. St John's Winchester currently provides housing for more than 100 almshouse residents."
Time for a rethink on Cathedral Clock. Mystery surrounds the clock on the tower of Winchester Cathedral. Although it's still doing what it should, telling us the time, it's in need of a spot of timely TLC. The internal works need an overhaul, but perhaps above all else, the clock also needs a complete facelift. It looks dirty and wholly unbefitting on such an iconic and historic building in Winchester Cathedral, as Winchester Cathedral. There lies one of the mysteries, though. The colouring of the clock face now presents itself as a dirty brown, and it set the cathedral's works department wondering what the colour was in the past. Although archive records exist detailing all the work carried out inside and outside the cathedral for centuries, there's no mention anywhere of the colour of the paint used on the clock face. There are countless photographs of the tower and its clock, but they're mostly black and white. An image in a 1970s guidebook, however, does indicate it was light blue around that time. But was it blue before that? Or indeed subsequently? The 1985 edition of the Friends of the Cathedral Record reported that, through the generosity of Canon Charles Wells, the face of the cathedral clock was repainted and regilded in memory of his wife. Again, no mention of colour. Was it once black, perhaps, with gilded numerals or even ox blood red, shades of which are all currently being considered by the cathedral authorities? Another mystery is why an important clock in the city, hundreds of years old, is only visible on one side of the tower, the south side, which faces the close, not the city itself. The suggestion is that in the 17th and 18th century, ordinary Winchester workers were not to be reminded by a large clock how many hours they'd worked. Only those living in the cathedral close needed to know the time. The working parts of the clock were clearly put together by the famous clockmakers Ainsworth Thwaites of Clerkenwell, London. There's an engraved plate which says so. But the then cathedral blacksmith, one Mr. John Early, must also have had a major part to play in the construction and installation of the timepiece during the 1770s. Notes in an accounting book under the heading Repairs of the Church reveal that Mr. Early was paid £79.13 on account of the new clock in full of his bill, a figure which would be in the region of £16,000 in today's values. 100 years ago, in 1925, a London horologist, Percy Webster, was asked to assess the condition of the Winchester clock. He reported, "I do not consider it unduly worn after nearly 150 years of wear, and if refurbished in the near future, there is no reason why it should not be used indefinitely." However, whilst acknowledging the cathedral's love of its special timepiece, he wasn't exactly its greatest admirer. "I find this clock to have been entirely reconstructed in accordance with the engraved plate by Ainsworth Thwaites in 1777. Of course, it does not fulfil the requirements of a modern standard timekeeper for a town the importance of Winchester, but it is undoubtedly of great interest to preserve it as far as possible untouched in your wonderful old cathedral." A century on, work will soon begin on the thorough overhaul of the inner workings of the clock, in addition to a face washing and repainting of the dial. The colour? To be decided.
Cash, please, not chocolates. Hampshire Hospitals Charity has asked people to donate money instead of chocolate eggs this Easter. The charity, which supports hospitals in Basingstoke, Andover and Winchester, is usually contacted by people wanting to give chocolate treats to children in hospital. However, they have explained that many of the children are too unwell to enjoy the chocolate. Morgan Hughes, fundraising assistant in Hampshire Hospitals Charity, said, "Every year our children's wards across Basingstoke and Winchester are inundated with offers of chocolate treats for youngsters spending time in hospital over the Easter period. Whilst we are extremely grateful for all the chocolate eggs we are offered, often the children and young people visiting our wards over Easter may be either too poorly to enjoy these or not able to eat chocolate eggs. Instead, the charity is asking people to make financial donations to their Children and Young People Fund. Ms. Hughes explained how the funds raised could then be used by the charity. The funds will be used where they're needed most and could help fund projects such as craft activities for patients who might not be able to eat chocolate this Easter. Chocolate lasts a moment, but the funds we raise will continue to make a difference to those who use our hospitals long after Easter has been and gone.
Zoo's new arrivals just in time for Easter. Two baby cotton top tamarins have been born at Marwell Zoo. The arrivals, born to parents Gert and Miko on Thursday, April the 3rd, have increased the zoo's troop of tamarins to 7. This marks the third time Gert and Miko have become parents, with previous offspring named Pubert, Pugsley and Fester. Eleanor Dunn, the primates and small mammals keeper at Marwell, said the twins arrived just in time for National Siblings Day. She said, "It is really nice coincidence that these two new arrivals have been born just ahead of National Siblings Day." Cotton top tamarins are a calotrid, a family of neotropical primates, and it's quite common for calotrids to give birth to twins rather than a single offspring, so it's very appropriate timing. The zoo's cotton top tamarins work together as a family unit, with all members helping to care for the infants. The new pair are already settling in well and can be seen foraging in their habitat. Eleanor added, "The new pair are already making themselves at home and can be found keeping warm in basking spots at the top of their habitat, foraging in the choisya bush, a type of Mexican orange blossom, for insects and nectar. This species is critically endangered due to deforestation, habitat destruction, and the illegal pet trade in their native Colombia." That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the edit extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. As this is the Easter weekend, although we are making this recording on Good Friday, the memory sticks will only go in the post on Saturday, and the first delivery after that will be Tuesday. So apologies for the delay. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.